Once again, happy Father's Day to everybody out there. A couple days ago, because he's incredibly busy, I interviewed filmmaker Steve James via telephone, thanks to the expertise of producer Lise Graham. I interviewed him about his latest film called Abacus, Small Enough to Jail. It's the astonishing Kafkaesque story of a Chinese immigrant family in New York who started a bank and then later became the only U.S. bank to face criminal charges in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. It is stunning. It is playing through Thursday at the Siskel Film Center. Please go to abacusmovie.com or siskelfilmcenter.org/abacus and now listen to Steve James. It is my great pleasure and delight to have the man I've just been raving about, Steve James, on the phone. We're taping this Thursday afternoon before his remarkable movie sets in for a week-long stay through next Thursday at the Gene Siskel Film Center. Hi, Steve.
Hey there, Rick. How are you?
I'm good. One of the many, many, many interesting things about this film is that you use clips from, and I think it's so beautifully done, some clips from It's a Wonderful Life, sort of, and George Bailey. This story is, to my mind, not a wonderful life. I'm not going to tell people how this tale ends, but it is, to me, a kind of horror story out of Franz Kafka. Am I making too much of that?
Well, I think for the Sung family that went through it, they would probably agree with that, yes.
How did you first hear about this family and the troubles that they were? They were indicted in 2012 for banking shenanigans, is what I will call it. The title of the film, again, is Abacus, Small Enough to Jail. And you've all heard that phrase, too big to fail, about why none of the real banking criminals in this country have ever been indicted, not even close to being indicted. How did this film come to you?
It came to me through producer Mark Mitten. Mark worked with me on Life Itself.
Yeah, well, I know he's Mark pretty well. Yeah.
You know Mark, Chicagoan.
Oh, yeah.
And I've known Mark for about 10 years now. Well, he's known the Sung family for about 10 or 12 years, was friends with them, and he called me up one day as the trial was imminent and said, you know, there's this crazy story going on in New York, this crazy trial's about to kick off with this family I know and their bank, and I mean, it's hard to believe, but they're the only bank in the wake of the 2008 crisis that's actually been criminally indicted, connected to it. And you know, and he started to explain to me the situation, how they discovered the fraud themselves and how they took action and went above and beyond. And, you know, and initiated their own internal investigation and got rid of some other people and kind of did everything you would want a bank to do, you know, if you're going to discover fraud. You know, it's unfortunate, and they were shocked and horrified. So, but then they ended up being the focus of the DA of New York, Cyrus Vance Jr., and his investigation to put them on trial. And so Mark told me all about this, and it was kind of hard to believe. I said, you know, I haven't heard anything about this, and there was a reason for that, because no one in the mainstream media
was
covering it. Even the venerable New York Times only did two articles, and we feature them both in the film. One was the indictment. You know, the spectacle of the indictment where when Cyrus Vance Jr.'s office chained together these low-level loan officers.
I'm assuming you did not film that.
No, that was back in 2012.
Describe that, Steve. Describe. It seems to have been, and I've seen a lot of perp walks and a lot of people paraded through court and jail. I had never seen anything like this. How did it strike you? You've never seen anything like that, have you?
No. You know, I think it was really quite revealing. I mean, so, you know, essentially what happened is that when, after investigating the bank for at least 2 years, they decided to file an indictment against them and accuse the management of the bank right up to the top of condoning and encouraging being complicit in the fraud that they, the bank, had discovered themselves, right? And so I think just to get the kind of attention that Vance was looking for, because he was, you know, in his view, I think, trying this extremely important case of a, you know, a bank connected to the crisis, they decided to parade together, you know, chain together these mostly former employees at that point, former employees, and parade them down the hallway in front of the cameras. And it worked. I mean, it got some pretty good coverage in New York City. And he even had the feds behind him at the announcement of the indictment. He had, you know, presumably a lot of those feds who let off the big banks, but there they were.
No kidding.
Standing four square behind Vance to prosecute this small bank.
Cyrus Vance,
you know, it created outrage in the Chinese community there in New York City. They were horrified at it, as was the bank. And, you know, we have lawyers in the film, you know, that were part of this case saying never in their 25-year career had they seen anything like it.
You know, I find it interesting, too, one of the leitmotifs, and you certainly do not beat it to death, but to my mind, I come out of this film feeling the strong undercurrent of, it's not your place to say yes or no, but I come out of it feeling the strong undercurrent of racism in this thing.
Yeah. I agree with that. And I think, I think we were pretty restrained, and we kind of want the audience watching this.
No question you were.
Come to their own conclusion. Because I do think that the racism that went on here was not calculated. It was not overt. I think, you know, when I asked Cyrus Vance Jr. in the film about that, about how that had been perceived, his answer, which is in the film, was very revealing. He said,
"No kidding.
No. We would never do that. We didn't treat this bank any different than we would a South American
or a
bank, or you know,
or
an Indian bank.
Except same like a, you know, WASP bank that was
right.
Oddly,
you know,
missing."
So, yeah, and I think that where it really, you know, outside of the perp walk and the sort of, you know, spectacle of all that, I think that even embedded in the actual trial, the way in which the prosecution chose to look at the fraud that went on at Abacus, which must be said was for the most part extremely petty.
Well, let me bring up one stunning fact near the end of it. Of the 2,000-some loans that this 3,000-some loans that this bank gave over this period of years, how many do you think defaulted, ladies and gentlemen? Nine. Nine. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 out of 3,000, which makes, and you must have done some deep digging into this, Steve James, which makes this generally a model for every other bank, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. Abacus's default rate on their loans is 1/20th of the national average for banks.
Yeah.
And again, there was fraud going on that they, you know, didn't recognize. As soon as they did, they took action.
Right.
But even in the cases where fraud was happening, the loans performed, and that's because the kind of fraud that was mostly going on was very petty, and it actually had nothing ultimately to do with the ability of the borrowers to be good for the loans.
To be good and pay back, exactly.
Which is the exact opposite of what went on in 2008, where, you know, people who had no business buying homes were encouraged to take on loans that they would never be able to pay back, because that's not how, you know, they were making the money by getting the loans and selling them and insuring them, not having them perform.
How difficult was it to get, and you do a remarkable job, you and your collaborators on this, of giving a sense of New York's Chinese community and what it meant for them, and especially for you family, to Sioux family, to have a part in it? How difficult was it to get access? Because your access to that family is pretty remarkable. There's some very emotional moments in this film.
Yeah, and also some funny ones, because they're a very humorous family.
Yeah, they're a great gang. Boy, smart. They're everything, Steve. They're everything you could want.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's kind of surprised people when they hear about the film. They think it's going to be unrelentingly depressing.
Oh,
and,
no.
You know,
no.
It's not. I mean, because the family has such spirit and life about them, and the mom, who's perhaps the funniest person in the film, pretty much steals the movie. But yes, I mean, I think that the only way we got access to that community was because of the Sungs and their place in that community. And also, there's an activist we feature in the film, Don Lee, who is also a pillar of the Chinatown community, and he was four square behind the Sungs and you know, outraged at what was going on. And so it's when you have that kind of access to people that matter in a community that it becomes possible for us as filmmakers and outsiders to come in there.
As you were doing this, one of the interesting things too, Steve, I don't think, Steve James, I don't think you've ever done a what basically is partly a courtroom drama here.
No.
You did it without getting any access to, except for a few moments near the end where nothing's going on really, to getting access to film any part of the trial. Did that trouble you at first?
Well, it worried me.
Yeah.
I'll be honest.
Yeah.
It worried me, you know. It was a case where, you know, some cases it's legally forbidden for you to be in a courtroom, and different states have different rules about this. But in New York, technically we could have been in the courtroom, but in order to be there, we had to have permission of the judge and both both lawyer teams. And we struck out. And actually the funny thing is that the judge, we really sense wanted us to film it, because I think we got the strong sense from him that he felt like this really was an important case.
Well,
and that it should get more coverage.
Well, the
at any rate,
the other thing
it worried me. It worried me, and so one of the things though we came up with to solve it is that we hired a really terrific courtroom artist.
Is that artist's name? Because I was so have made, thanks to that person, male or female, and you'll not tell me
Christine Cornell.
Her artwork is absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's thrilling, frankly.
Really helps bring it to life. Between her artwork and, you know, judicious choice of testimony for us to reenact, you know, with audio, not actors.
Right,
obviously.
Of course.
It really, we felt like it was our best way to try to bring the trial to life.
I'm not going to tell people how Abacus, Small Enough to Jail, ends, what the resolution of it is. To my mind, it's better. It's really better than the best Law and Order episode. I mean, it really it did, Steve.
That's my friend.
I hope you take that as praise, because I was on the edge of my seat. I mean, because I think one of the reasons why, and I'm sure you'll agree, I hope you will, is that, and as you do in all of your films, you get to know the participants on what I feel is a terribly intimate level. I would have no problem meeting any of that family on the street and walking up to them and scaring them probably and hugging them, saying, I know Steve James. Like, oh, Steve's a great guy. Don't you think that is something that, do you sense it? I mean, do you, you know, I remember back to Life Itself when you had these intimate shots of Roger, and that, I think, brought him inside a human being and put him inside even people who didn't know him. That's got to be. And how do you do that, Steve James? How do you do that? Create that intimacy.
Well, I think that the key has always been, first and foremost, trust. Mm-hmm. You have to have the trust of your subjects. And not trust that you're not going to show anything about them that's difficult,
right?
Or maybe even, you know, mistakes they might make.
Sure.
I'm not looking for that kind of trust. That, you know, I'm not there to just promote them.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, an honest relationship, you know this in whether it's a marriage or it's a friendship. An honest relationship is one. I mean, a good relationship, a deep relationship, is built on honesty. And trust. And
no
so
question.
I think that's, you know, I try to get there with people. And I think that I also, you know, one of the other strategies I have, which may be a little surprising, is that I don't make a big deal about what we're making, because I have no idea I have no idea what's going to happen to a film. I really don't.
Do you know?
So I'd make it as little a deal as possible. We shoot it with a small crew, and we kind of create a kind of intimate atmosphere in the filming as well.
See, I don't know you. You and I have never talked about finances, thank God, because I know nothing about them. But did you have to do a kind of crash course in the whole banking crisis to be able to tell it in such with such narrative drive? Because it is, for many people, kind of complicated.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say that we really had to kind of steep ourselves in the particulars of this trial, you know, because most of it, as we show in the film, I mean, most of it is really, really petty stuff. And it's the kind of stuff that, frankly, before the regulations that came about as a result of 2008, you know, the Dodd-Frank regulations, that it's the kind of fraud that a lot of it went on everywhere, which is, you know, people inflating their income because they didn't have to show tax returns, and people
saying my grandmother gave me $20,000 and she's dead.
For my down payment. Yeah. I mean, that's the way I got my first house, was through my parents like that. So, you know, we had to kind of really try to understand and tease out in a way that we could make it comprehensible and interesting, hopefully, the particulars of this case. When it came to the 2008 financial stuff, I mean, I followed that somewhat back when it happened, but the irony here is that none of what went on at Abacus had anything at all to do with what they were doing in 2008.
Yeah, I think
not at all. Maybe. Despite what Vance said.
Well, this Sirens Vance Jr., who obviously is the son of the former Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter, is a kind of he looks the part, does he not?
Yes.
did you, immaterial, you'll be asked this when you're at one of the many sit downs you do at the Cisco Film Center through Thursday. Did you like him? Did you think he was evil? What did you think?
No, I do not think he's evil.
I didn't either.
I think he's incredibly misguided.
Yep.
And I think his ambition got the best of him.
Yeah.
In terms of, I mean, I think he truly believed this bank was up to no good. I think he really believed that. But I think he was blinded to how weak his case was. He was blinded to you know, other points of view about how the fraud could have happened that did not reach to the higher levels of the bank. And I think he had the ambition, clearly, to want to be the guy who prosecuted
a bank
connected to 2008. And one of the ways that's revealed, again, besides the indictment that we've talked about, is that the Abacus Bank people were not offered any kind of fine in lieu of prosecution, which is what all the big banks were offered. They paid these big fines.
And no buyout either, because they didn't need one.
And no buyout, of course.
No buyout. Yeah.
But they were told you can pay a fine and plead guilty to a felony. Which tells you that he wanted that distinction.
It seems so that he wanted that notch on his belt. Steve James is a great filmmaker, and all great films have good and evil in them. The evil for me in this film, which I've referred to only moments ago as something out of Franz Kafka, is this guy Ken Yu.
Yeah.
There is a parade, as it says in the film, on the stand of, whether they're bank former employees of the bank or customers, of a parade of liars on the stand. Ken Yu takes the cake. Do you not think? This is a bad guy.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he became the prosecution star witness.
Yeah.
And he was an outlier. The kinds of stuff that Ken Yu was doing was much more serious and corrupt than the other people that they charged with crimes. And so he became the star witness. And I think one of the things that the prosecution didn't really think through well enough was that, you know, he was such a liar to the Sungs, who ran the bank, that he also was going to turn around and lie a lot to the prosecution, because he was all about making sure, you know, he came out of this okay. And, you know, that was a real problem.
Steve James, you've made a remarkable, remarkable movie. Abacus, Small Enough to Jail, is running through Thursday at the Cisco Film Center in the heart of the Loop. I have loved working with you in our modest way, and I've even I enjoy much more than being part of any movie, life itself. I wish I could say I was part of Hoop Dreams, because I used to be quite a basketball player, but I can't take that credit. Steve, yeah. you are a great, great filmmaker, and this is a great, it is a great American story, and so congratulations.
Well, thank you, Rick, and it's always a pleasure and a joy to talk to you.
Same here, pal. Take care, and I'll be promoting this throughout the show. So thank you, Steve. Thanks.